Fortune 500 companies trust Interoptik for optical transceivers and cables. Since 2004, Interoptik has provided high-performance optics and cables at a fraction of the cost of OEM gear. Interoptik products are 100% tested and backed up by real engineers. Work with the optics experts at Interoptik. Find out more at interoptik.com/packetpushers.
Welcome to Heavy Networking, the flagship podcast from the Packet Pushers Podcast Network. If you've ever argued with yourself about whether a single logical L3 link over a layer 2 aggregated link is better than parallel layer 3 ECMP links for a point-to-point connection, you found your tribe. I am Ethan Banks, along with Drew Conray Murray. You can connect with us on LinkedIn or the Packet Pushers community Slack group, and please do. On today's episode, we are chatting about Network Service Orchestrator, a commercial tool from Cisco that can play an important role in your automation stack. This is not a sponsored show. It just so happens that our guest has worked a lot with Cisco NSO in his automation practice, and we thought it would be a useful conversation to discuss his experiences using NSO in the wild. Well, who's our guest? None other than James Henderson. James is an automation solutions architect at IT consultancy Ductus, based out of Sweden. James has also been a speaker at Cisco Automation Developer Days, as well as Denmark NOG and North America NOG. James, welcome to Heavy Networking. Hey, man, this is your first time on Heavy Networking. So would you tell the nice folks who you are, what you do, and maybe any projects you want to share with us? Maybe you got a blog or a book or some open source software you're working on, that sort of thing.
Oh, boy, do I ever have some projects to talk about. But I find this is always a kind of a difficult question to answer because there's there's a lot of things that I could say. I would say the most kind of interesting thing, or the most in terms of what I do, is really taking I talk to a lot of people who are, they work in networking, they're network engineers, network architects, and they have things that they want to do with their network, and they want to be able to control their network. They have to make changes faster and faster, and they need to be able to do this reliably. And so what I do is I come from a computer science background, and I listen to that and kind of work to design and implement those systems to kind of make kind of consumable automation. A lot of that has centered around NSO in the past for me. And so that's kind of the angle that I come at it from. That makes sense.
So it feels like you see things from a systems level. You see the big picture and imagine how to move things through that system to accomplish what your client's trying to accomplish.
Yeah, it's become more and more of that. When I started, it was we have a service that we have to design. Okay, that's good. But then it's not just a question of the service, it's a question of, okay, how frequently is that service going to be used? What are the constraints around it? How does that service interact with other services? And what are the resource management? And what are the problems, the operational things that might be coming out of, based on what kind of design that you choose to implement?
Now, another little thing you've started is a blog series about a taxonomy of sources of truth. Would you clue us into that?
This kind of came out of, and I talk about it in the article a little further, all the various things that fed into it. But I was noticing with NSO, okay, well, and Yang data modeling and all this, and I know that there's some contention over Yang in general, but there's the operational and configuration, for starters, right? Because you have operation config in your device. And then people are talking about, okay, intent-based networking. Oh, what is my source of truth? Is there one source of truth or many sources of truth? And I really started to think about that. And I realized, I think that there are answers to those questions, and those questions aren't products. Those answers aren't products, right? There's an actual truth here of what is our network? Why is network automation actually so hard? And so I decided to kind of break it down and figure out, can we actually create like a taxonomy of all these truths and say, okay, this type of truth on your network, this thing you care about, this is what it is. This is where it fits in. And this is how it relates to other truths on the network. At the very highest level, I would say that I think that really the challenge of network automation is that you have a thing that you want your network to do, and you have the way that what your network is doing. And then you need to reconcile those two things. And that happens across configuration, it happens across operation, and it happens across physical infrastructure. And all of that is going to happen across either both individual elements, which all have to work by themselves, as well as they have to work with as a network. So there's a network aspect to it, every network service. Kind of obvious, it's in the name, right? But basically what I do is break all of that down and actually give things names. And so that we can say, okay, well, this product exists and here's the areas of truth that this one solves. And yeah.
So, okay. That feels like a separate podcast all its own at some point. We got to have you back to talk through that. But for now, you're beginning to write on this topic. We're recording this in the beginning of August, 2024. I think you've written 2 blog posts so far.
That's right.
Where can people read that?
So far, I'm publishing it on LinkedIn. It will probably also be on our corporate webpage and our blog there. And then there's a bit of a conversation happening on the Network Automation Forum Slack. So you can go there and on general, every time I do one of these posts, I post it on general as well. And then that's kind of where a lot of the conversation has ended up happening. And then you can also comment on LinkedIn as well.
Okay, so find James's post on taxonomy of sources of truth on his LinkedIn. Just look for James Henderson. And then if you're in the Network Automation Forum Slack group, you can find more there. Plus your corporate blog. Is that Ductus, the corporate blog?
Yeah, Ductus, going to go on? Ductus blog, yep.
Okay. All right, well, let's move the conversation ahead to Cisco NSO, the star of today's podcast, James. And for those folks who are unfamiliar with the product, would you give us the 10,000 foot overview of NSO? What is this thing? What are the main use cases?
So NSO is, I think it's kind of a unique product. And I have never seen anything that really handles network automation in the same way. And some other things, they have, you know, some elements that are the same. But NSO is really a declarative management engine for the configuration of your network. You model every single thing that you're managing if you're using NSO. There's no such thing as just pushing config by text to a device with NSO. Every element of configuration that is being sent to the device has been modeled and placed in a Yang model. And then you create a declarative mapping between the services that you want to run and the configuration that those services require to operate.
So declarative is an important word. Would you explain what that means?
Absolutely. So the declarative and imperative are kind of the two different paradigms that you'll see in you know, kind of computer science programming terms, right? And the basic thing is, in a imperative language, you tell the program how to do something. Here's the steps you take. You take this variable, you loop over, you know, this array, add one to the variable every time, something like that. In a declarative language, what you do is you say what you want the results to be. I usually use SQL as an example here because a lot of people have used or at least seen SQL, and it is a declarative language because you're saying what you want it to do. You're saying, I want to see the join of these two tables across, you know, this key. And I want to see you sum, you know, this column up and see what the result is. You don't have to tell it how to do it. You don't say iterate over each row in this table and add one to the counter and then divide by the number of rows. You don't say that. You just say, give me the sum. And that's a declarative thing. My argument is that in a network automation system, your intent, what you want to do with the system really is that's a declaration of what you want the system to do. And then you need to have, the system has to do it, right? So NSO allows you to create a declaration between that service config and the correct device config to make that service happen.
Can you give an example?
Certainly. You know, I'll also use the VLAN example. It's easy. Everyone understands it. So at least everyone listens to this podcast, I think. let's say you have your VLAN service, and you have a set of configuration. You have to add the VLAN to the device. You have to add it onto the correct client interface and the correct trunk interface, right? And then you have to do this for all the devices that are on the VLAN. Uh-huh. In NSO, you would say, basically, the device would have, first of all, a Yang model for it. Even if the device was entirely CLI driven, you would have a Yang model. And then it converts however that device that is configured in the Yang model into commands that it would run to fix the delta between whatever the device config is now and what it has to be, right?
Whether it's Cisco or Juniper or Arista, it doesn't matter. It's got a Yang model that's its basis, and it understands what commands are needed on the backend device to support whatever the Yang model says we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. So in NSO, you would create a template, and it would be an XML template. And this XML template would go from whatever your service definition is. And it would say, okay, well, look in the service session and see what the VLAN ID is. And now that means you need to say VLAN or whatever VLAN ID, add that. Okay. And look at whatever interface is specified on this device and, you know, create that interface, put over whatever MTU or whatever it needs and add the and add that VLAN to that interface. And it would just say that for that one service, right? And even if that device was not, you know, the way it works is like some systems can do this where it declaratively create the whole configuration for the device and just recreate it every time from all the services. NSO really only needs to look at the one service and it'll figure out the delta between however the device is configured now and how it has to be. So let's say you want to change that MTU. You could change it. And then it would just change the MTUs on all those configurations. It wouldn't remove the interfaces, add the interfaces on again. Just it would know, okay, this is what, and you would never have to configure it to tell it how to do that MTU change. You never have to have a, when the MTU changes and nothing else changes, here's how you do that. No, you just say, you already told it what to do, and it can use its model to derive what the actual CLI commands would be to make those updates.
And then does NSO go out and actually make those configuration changes to the appropriate devices to instantiate the service?
Yes, so that's exactly what it does. So it basically does it as a network-wide transaction. So the idea is that when you make a change to your network, you would presumably want it to either happen or not happen. And you definitely don't want it to sort of half happen. And so it will basically go out and connect to all the devices that need to be changed in order to update it. And it would make those changes. And then if any one device had a problem, it would undo the changes on all the devices, including CLI devices that don't really have transactions themselves.
So the key word there is atomic, I believe.
Atomic is the word. Yep.
Okay. It's an all or not. That is, it's all or nothing.
It's an all or nothing transaction.
Or if it fails partway through, it's going to back everything out and you're going to be back to where you started. So you're not in this unfortunate situation of being halfway through a change that was unable to complete for whatever reason.
That's right. Yep.
Okay. So declarative, it performs atomic changes across the network. What are the other key things we should know about NSO?
It provides a uniform API to your network and the devices on your network. So anything that exists in NSO, whether it's the services or the devices themselves, it will give you a netconf, a restconf, and a CLI API or CLI interface and a GUI to be able to configure those, all of those things, right? So you could say, for example, it's a common thing that you have some services you're orchestrating, some services are kind of being done manual or network engineers need to go and fix things from time to time. That can actually still all go through NSO and you get a very, very similar CLI interface to actually logging into the device. You can do all of that. And you could also use, basically say, now my device has a netconf interface because NSO has modeled this with Yang and it publishes that netconf interface out onto your network. That API now exists because it's on NSO without writing, customizing anything. You have that.
So you said something interesting that if I can dig into for a second. So you said the whole idea of NSO is it's a model of all the devices on your network and the services that run on that. So is it sort of like, this is the golden config of my network? This is how things should be. Is that the idea?
So the model gives you what the structure of all possible inputs are really, or like what is the language that this device understands, at least that is understood by NSO that this device understands, and what are all the possible ways the device could be configured? That's what the model is. And then you have your instance. So your instance is what your actual configuration is in the configuration database, CDB in NSO terms. Mm-hmm. And so NSO, it certainly does allow you to do golden config, but modeling it is just so it can interface with it. And then then you have instances. So you have a service model, for example, and then you have service instance, which is the actual, you know, VLAN service or whatever, the specific one that you're configuring.
And is this CDB, does that live inside NSO or is it pulling it from the actual devices? I guess the thrust of my question was, am I going to get into diffs between what NSO thinks the configuration of the devices and what the actual configuration of the devices.
Yeah, this is exactly the thing, right? So NSO does keep a local copy of the device configuration so that it can do its job. And the way that works is it will to basically do like a show running config, for example, takes all that text, parses it, puts that into its model and says, okay, this is what I have in my model. But then it also has to reconcile that to what the services are. So I create a service and it will say, okay, well, to create the service, you need to add this. And it would actually do things like do reference counting. So if you create your device or you have your device, it will, you can read that in, you add a service to the device, it would actually put a reference inside its state engine or its inside the CDB and track what that, you know, for example, you're using an let's say you use a loopback interface for a particular service, but then you want to delete that loopback interface when the service is deleted, but that loopback interface is shared with other services as well. That kind of thing, it can actually do because it counts how many times it's been used. Reconciling these two things is the tricky thing, especially when you have somebody manually going on the device and they, let's say they add that loopback interface. Now you sync it from, now it's got one reference count, but that reference count is not attached to a particular service. So it's not going to delete that loopback. Even if you deleted all the services that you think you should have to delete to get rid of the loopback, right? So managing that can be sort of one of the trickier things, but it's also one of those things. It's not exactly a bug. It's just, if you actually want to know all these things, you kind of have to track it all, right?
James, another point that you made was that I can log into Cisco NSO as a, it's got a CLI and so on. So does that mean it's like a proxy or a jump box to individual devices, or that I log into it and manage the network as a whole from it, and endpoint devices like individual routers and switches and so on aren't something I have to think about at this point?
At some level, both, weirdly enough, because it has basically, and also divides things, roughly speaking, into your service land and your device land, right? So you'll see slash devices and NSO's root. This is a hierarchical database, right? Yang based. And so slash devices, and then you'll have slash device, and then every device has a name. And under there, you'll have all the configuration for that device. And it'll all be accessible via CLI. So yes, you can have an engineer who logs into NSO via CLI and goes, says device is device, whatever device they're on. And then they can say, you know, interface, blah, 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 you know, enable. They can do that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And that gives you, but it's not exactly like a jump box in that it's not like you're going to it and then you're SSHing to the device through NSO. Mm-hmm. You're going into it and then you're telling NSO what you want the configuration of that device to be. And then you're committing that configuration through NSO. It's still model driven in this case, right?
Still model driven. It's basically an abstraction layer between you and whatever Correct. That device is. You're dealing with the NSO model. It doesn't matter that it might be an Arista box on the one hand or a Juniper box on the other hand. You can feed the same command in at the NSO CLI and accomplish the same task, even though if you were to look at the NOS configuration script, it's going to be pretty different.
I would say it's, if you're in the device configuration, that's almost true, because you have a uniform interface to access like through NSO, right? You could have the Cisco or Juniper style CLI. You can just say switch CLI and it'll switch between them. And because it's all model driven, right? So it can do that. But the actual commands, so the way that it does a CLI interface is based on the actual CLI commands. And those are going to be different across different vendors. So your CLI experience will still be different across different devices and vendors, even if you're going through the NSO model, but it is still model driven because it has to have a different model for each device because of they're just different, right?
So, all right, declarative configuration. We've talked about atomic changes. We've talked about uniform API and expanded on that. Anything else we should know about NSO before we continue on, James?
There's so many things. Keep asking me that question. I think another feature that a lot of people like about NSO is that it has this concept of a dry run. So a dry run is basically where you can say, and it works either if you're in this device mode or if you're in a service mode, you say, I say commit dry run, or you can do the same thing through the different APIs. And it'll tell you what commands it's going to send to the device. So for a lot of customers, they are kind of thinking, well, you know, I don't really fully trust this thing. I want to know what it's going to do before it does it. And that's supported. So you can see exactly, and it does that because it is dynamically actually figuring out what commands it will send because it's based on what's already on the device. Because you could have half the services already implemented. You're adding, you know, just another instance or something, right? And it will show you just that, right? So I think the dry run is probably another interesting feature.
So just to be clear, it's not like, you know, I've got a copy of my network in a lab and I'm testing the actual commit to see what happens. It's just showing me what the actual commands are going to be, and I can sort of eyeball them and just do sort of like a safety check. Like, yeah, this seems right. It should work.
Yeah, that's kind of what it's for. Sometimes people will put it in a workflow engine. So it'll be like, well, we, you know, every time we need to make this change, here's what the process is. We do this pre-check and then we will, you know, update the service and say, okay, do a dry run, show that to the operator. Operator is going to look at it and say, looks okay to me, says okay. And then it goes to the next process. Now, ideally, you're not doing that every time. It's fully automated, but it's something as a stepping stone that certainly helps with comfort.
So as you're getting used to it, you could do a few with the dry run feature and have it go through your workflow. And then as you get more comfortable, you can start to just skip that step essentially. Yep.
Or you can use a dry run from the CLI as well. So you just, as you're working, because you could make a change to a service, like, did that change work the way I thought it would? And then you can see exactly what the actual impact of the change was.
Got it. Let's pause for a message from our sponsor, Interoptic. Interoptic is the optical transceiver and cable specialist that maximizes your IT savings while minimizing network failures. Interoptic provides high-performing optics at a fraction of the price of brand-name optics. The Interoptic experts can help you spec the best optical transceivers and cables for your network environment. Interoptic optical transceivers are 100% guaranteed to be operationally equivalent with Cisco, Juniper, Extreme, Arista, Brocade, Palo Alto, and many other switches and routers. Due to Interoptic's deep optical transceiver technical experience, they can ensure that all messages, alerts, alarms, and threshold data are equivalent to OEM brands. Interoptic deploys rigorous 100% testing on their devices before they're shipped. Interoptic optical transceivers are built to the exact same quality standards as the OEMs and typically come from the exact same manufacturing lines. That's why insurance companies, retailers, financial services, and federal and state government customers deploy optics and cables from Interoptic. You can purchase the same, if not better performing, optical transceivers tested and backed up by real engineers at a fraction of OEM costs. Find out more at interoptic.com/packetpushers. That's interoptic.com/packetpushers. And now back to the podcast. And just to step back for a second, we've sort of hinted here that NSO is multi-vendor. It's not just Cisco products. And that's because I believe Cisco acquired this product from Taylev.
Yeah, my history with it is I used to work for a router switch company, and did like industrial grade switches north of Toronto called RuggedCom. They since were acquired by Siemens. We used a product called ConfD. And so ConfD was sold by Taylev. And this is basically the, and I worked on back then doing Yang data models and basically the C callbacks and stuff to basically implement them. So the idea is basically now this is a management engine for your router switch. So it gives you the CLI, it gives you the NetConf interface, right? Mm-hmm. A web UI. And so that was TLF's original product. And that was my first experience with it. And then basically what they did was they said, okay, well, we have this, you know, amazing management engine for a device, probably the best. I think today it still is probably the best management engine that you can have. But the, let's do that for the network. And so let's expand it. And so instead of just looking at one device tree and then having all the complexity of making things real, right? So you can bet, you make the change on the, you say, okay, well, here's how the route has to change. Then it has to actually update the routes in Linux on the device. That's the kind of stuff that we did with the device. But going up a level, NSO, let's model the entire network. Let's model all the services, every device on the network, and take those changes instead of just doing them transactionally on a device. Now we're doing transactionally across the whole network. And then Cisco acquired them.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. I think I know the answer to this question, but I want to ask it anyway, James, for clarification, because there's so many products in the network automation space that fall under different headings. Mm. How would you say NSO works at its heart? Is it an intent engine, a workflow engine, a pipeline, more like a controller or an orchestrator? Is it an automation engine? How would you describe it?
I would definitely classify as an intent engine. This goes closely with the declarative concept. So an intent, I see it as being, the intent is what you want to do with your network, right? And it is a declarative intent engine. It allows you to just make that declaration and it happens. You don't have to tell it how to make every individual change to get there.
So, and it sounds to me like it's sort of the way it thinks about things is based on services. Is that the idea? Mm-hmm. That's it's sort yeah. of premises. Everything is a service, and that's how I think about in my configurations.
That's how it thinks about basically what is your intent for your network. You break that up into services, and then that those services are translated into configuration.
Okay, and services could be a new VLAN, or what right. other kinds of services would I be thinking about?
Could be a lot of things. It could be like a link, a point-to-point link of some sort. It could be like it can literally be anything that your system it needs, and it can even encompass things like virtual machines that you're spinning up, as well as links to make those virtual machines actually accessible. Yeah, there's a lot of options.
And is there a service catalog element to this? Is this something I could expose to other parts of the business to say, hey, if you need XYZ, here's your options, and then we'll make it happen? Or is it more like internal, just for the networking side to get things done that typically need to happen?
I think ideally it's operating as basically a zero touch. So you're going straight from whatever the business requirements are, and those are being translated into your service definition, and then NSO is making that service definition happen. So like ideally the service is everything that, like, at the top level, and you can divide their service in multiple layers too, but at the top level service, it really should be stuff that's externally visible. And then that can be decomposed into maybe subservices or actual commands that have to be run. Now, in practice, sometimes it's much more, it's internal operations that are happening. People are planning a lot of resources. You know, you're thinking about other services that you're trying to provide, and you're doing backend services with NSO. That certainly is a valid use case, but it really could be either way. It's extremely flexible.
Well, I'm still not sure I'm still clear on the way Drew asked it. It was, is it just for network engineers, or would I expose this to an external customer as a service? So for an example,
I think I get what you're asking.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so just to bring up a different product, Anuta Networks, they cater to service providers and large enterprises. And if I want to build a complex VPN service, mm-hmm. and then expose that so that someone else who's a consumer of that VPN service needs to spin up a new one, or a developer needs to pull up, you know, this service and build it so that as part of their application deployment, they need to stand up this network environment. And mm-hmm. it's a service we've already created that's got, I don't know, a load balancer configuration and a particular routing and so on. That's all been constructed by the network team on the platform, in this case, Cisco NSO, and then exposes a service. And now I can, as someone who's not on the networking team, go and request that service and have it become instantiated for me.
Yeah, so you could certainly do it directly with NSO. You could do it from a service portal of some sort. You could create a customer-centric service portal. You do at some level need to like figure out from like a role-based access control to make sure that changes can't be made just based on, you know, you can't give just access to the NSO API directly to a customer. That would not be generally great, because if only because they are, like, you could do it because you can create the role-based access control and say that customer can only change their area, but really probably you want to give them a fairly simplified interface to making their changes and then pass that on to NSO. But it certainly is very useful in enabling this sort of behavior.
Okay, so what I'm taking away is then that NSO doesn't have like sort of a full featured service catalog that I can expose to third parties to let them order services. But if a request for a service comes in over the transom from the business unit, NSO is what I would use to make it happen.
Service catalog, like, I mean, you can certainly create web UI giving some sort of service catalog. You can, there's also, you know, like Yang based discovery. You can provide, so you can do that. I'm not sure how typical of a use case it is, really, but you can do that. Everything is there to do that. So I'm not going to say you can't do that.
Okay. So I really want to, I could make it happen.
I don't even know if it's a really want to. It's a,
that's a question.
I don't know. I don't see anything wrong with doing it, to be honest.
Okay.
I'm going from what I've done with it more than what theory, you know, I'm not an NSO sales guy, right? I've implemented things with NSO. That hasn't been something that I implemented. So I don't know as much about it, I guess.
All right, James, if I'm introducing NSO to my environment, how do you recommend I deploy it? It's like, talk to me about things like, is there a SaaS option? Do I have to ponder size and scaling and so on? Let's go through it.
Okay, so NSO runs in a Linux environment. There's now a containerized version. I don't know a whole lot about it. I haven't used it yet, but generally it's very flexible in terms of it runs on Linux, also runs on Darwin for development. And they just got ARM working. So that's also kind of nice for those on M2s and et cetera. So it generally just runs on a machine. It's not like Kubernetes based or anything like that. You will have more than one instance as you're getting into things like high availability and multi-layered architectures.
Okay, so let's talk about architecture for a second, because I was imagining NSO runs on a Linux box that a bunch of us access remotely, like either SSHing into the thing, or maybe it's a client server model and I've got some kind of an NSO client I run and then hit the server. But there's some central thing that runs NSO and does all the magic.
Yeah, so it runs as basically a daemon on a Linux machine, and then it opens up ports for access. So it has SSH. It runs its own SSH server, its own netconf server, its own web UI. So you will connect to those. Ideally, you're not just SSHing into the Linux machine and then going directly into NSO using, like you can, but it's not really, you know, you should be going through NSO's like AAA system, which is enabled when you go through its actual SSH port rather than kind of backdooring in.
Okay.
But the answer is it's not SaaS. I've got to run this on-prem or in the cloud, but Cisco's not going to run the infrastructure for me.
It's an on-prem right now.
Okay.
All right. So sizing, scaling, that's the next question. Do I have to put this on a big box or is it, it depends?
A little bit of an, it depends. It uses an in-memory database. So you're going to need some memory. Okay. And that really is proportional to how many service instances and how much device config are you managing. You have to think about it is storing all of that device configuration inside its database, and it needs to hold all that device, and it also needs to hold memory in order to run the database schema itself. So the schema itself takes up some memory, and then all the data that you're putting into it will continue to add to that memory requirement. And then in terms of CPU, you're basically bound based on how many device transactions are you making? How many SSH connections are you making? How much, there's things like validation. Like if it has to do a lot of validation callbacks, if it complicated lots of services and has to look through, do a lot of complicated database work for every service transaction. You're doing lots of them. You're going to need more CPU. So we get into that very much. It depends.
There's an N complexity problem here where potentially the greater the number of devices and the more meshed that network connectivity might be, it could be more complex for NSO to figure out exactly what needs to be deployed to make the service request come to life.
Yeah, so it scales linearly, right? So you double the number of devices, you're going to need to basically double the memory, right? You double your transaction frequency, you're probably going to need double the CPU to accomplish that, right? It's not, if you're designing your services correctly, it's not going to be going up exponentially as you're adding more stuff on. That's probably the most important thing there. So the first thing to do is just to kind of have one NSO machine and then just make it a good one as you are going into more and more. As you're getting more and more complex, more and more services, more and more devices.
Can I run these in a cluster for HA or failover, or is it just one machine and that's what you got?
So it does have HA. So there's two different HA implementations. There's original HA that only required two nodes, and there's a new HA Raft implementation, which requires three at the minimum. And it basically enhances the transactional engine so that it will do the transaction distributed across the HA spares. And then if there is an issue, then it can fail over to the spares based on, you can use BGP and new routing to change it. There's a couple different methods that you can use to control that. But
if I've got a globally distributed network or even regionally distributed, should I be running distributed instances of NSO?
So that may be useful. Then the reason is that the latency between communication over your devices to NSO is going to affect how long it takes you to make those transactions happen. And so let's say you wanted to make a service and a service is spanning more than one geographic area. It might make sense to have, let's say three NSOs, which are each located in their respective geographic areas. And then you could take from one. So we get into these terms, CFS and RFS. So CFS is customer facing service, RFS resource facing service, resource in this case being the device. So the idea is a customer facing service is really what you would, that's your NSO that you're interacting with. And then the resource facing service, that's what's actually going to talk to the devices. And it's going to use actually NetConf to communicate from that CFS node down to those RFS nodes. And the RFS node's job is going to be to actually potentially do even more validation, sometimes acquire resource, manage its own resources internally, and push things, and then push the updates. So that could give you better performance.
It's like a management node, worker node sort of a concept.
The one thing with it is that really all the nodes are NSO nodes, right? There's no, there is like an, it can be, there's something called LSA, the layered service architecture, which is designed for this. So like there's features built in to support this, but they are all full featured NSO nodes. So you would be running, for example, your CFS node in the LSA would also have its own high availability spares, right? And so would each of your RFS nodes. So that's like, just that's how it works. I don't know if that answers the question.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. It does. Then thinking about this connectivity, if I have a management network that's out of band, I've built a separate out of band network. It sounds like I'd be plugging my NSO nodes into that network.
Yeah. So what the basic requirement is, NSO needs to be able to talk to the management interface on the devices. So however that happens, that's what it needs to be able to do.
Got it. Okay. So that's logical. It's exactly what I would have expected. And then from a standpoint of NSO has to run in some sort of a context, it's got to log into devices and it's going to use some sort of credentials. Is there a special service account I create for it or a special user account?
Typically, yes. Yeah. It can run as its own user account on the Linux machine. And then you can have, you can have accounts which are allowed to get into it as well through through a socket on the device itself. But your usual administration, like I said, should go through its actual its own SSH server that it runs.
That way you can see in device logs and things, okay, NSO was the process that was doing this. Yeah.
Yeah. And also like the person logs in and they have to log in via an actual authorized account that, you know, and that account is going to be given a group, and then that group could be restricted to different parts of the data model based on what you want to control, what to let that group control.
Okay, so I think you just sort of anticipated my next question, which is it sounds like it does have role-based access control.
Yeah, so it uses NACM, so you can basically configure what parts of the data model each authorized group is allowed to access, either read, write, execute, for things like RPCs and actions.
Okay, so this sounds fairly similar to a lot of other systems that do what this does. Nothing was like way out of the ordinary from what you described, James, as far as deploying this thing. Before we move on to the next thing, are there any other tips you've got for people that are deploying NSO for the first time?
I think it's easy to underestimate what the challenges are in terms of developing good services and operating NSO properly and being aware of kind of it's one of those things, just like any system, when it's simple, it's simple. And when it's low frequency, it's low frequency, anything's going to work, right? You can just brute force it. As you get into more complicated service designs and you get into higher amounts of capacity, then it becomes very important that you do things correctly. Now, they have a whole guide on tuning and writing your services correctly. There's all kinds of depth that you can get into this stuff, but it's not one of these systems you're just going to be able to kind of toss people who are not experienced with NSO on a project, say, okay, you know, write some services here. It's going to require some, generally I would recommend that people who already have some NSO experience and then also a strong software development and kind of computer science backing among the team that's implementing this stuff.
Okay. Good tip, James, in that I've been on teams that have deployed new tools, and a lot of times we underestimated what it was going to take to make that tool go and become part of our workflow. It's like, yay, we bought the thing. It's going to make our lives so much better. And then getting down to actually using the thing was really hard. So yeah, good caution there. Another question. If I'm an all Cisco network, does NSO know everything that it needs to, or might I need to import models before NSO can handle everything?
So the way that NSO works fundamentally, I mentioned about modeling each of the devices, that is handled via something called a NED, network element driver. And the NED is done on a, basically it's an operating system level. So you have like an iOS NED, iOS XR NED, Nexus NED, right? Juniper NED. Well, for Juniper, you may be using the NetConf API. You can basically build your own NED from Yang models. But the NEDs are basically managed as part of like, but there's like a NED team that does this, right? So if you are becoming a customer, you're going to say, okay, these are the devices I want to manage. They're going to provide you with the NEDs that you need. And you're going to also say something like, here is what the possible range of configurations that I need to be able to apply. Here's what my golden configs look like for all these different services and devices. And they are going to be providing you with a NED that does all of that. And now this is true for Cisco devices, also true for any device, really.
Okay, so that was my next question, because it's a Cisco product. And so the default position for anything coming from a vendor is they support their own devices great. And they say they're multi-vendor, and then you get into what actually happens. And it's like half-hearted or kind of sucks or barely is supported. But what you're saying is with the NED model, and this is the roots of the product, the NED becomes effectively the abstraction layer for whatever the device is, and multi-vendor device support is genuine. It's as good for non-Cisco products as for Cisco products. Is that fair to say?
I mean, I haven't done a full like analysis of this, but in my experience, yes. Like that's the way the model works, that should be true. I will say there are some devices that are more challenging to automate than others, and this really is based on the type of interface that they have. Like if it's a standard Cisco-ish CLI, that's not going to be that difficult, right? If it's TL1 or something, that's going to be more challenging. Right. And it's really is just because it is fundamentally more difficult, and there's not as much built-in features for this, for that kind of thing, right? But yeah.
So, and we keep saying devices. Are we just talking routers and switches, or are there other things that NSO can work with?
It can work on anything that has a NED, anything that you need to manage. I don't have in my head like the full category of all the things that NSO does. You could write a NED to do something like change, you know, I've thought about it before, doing like config file changes on a Linux machine and then updating, restarting services and stuff like that. I think it'll be an interesting project. I can't say for sure if it exists or not, though.
I guess I'm thinking five. Devices that naturally sit in the network, like firewalls, SD-WAN, load balancers, that kind of thing.
Any of that stuff, yeah. As long as there's a NED, and there's a lot of NEDs. I do believe there is an F5 NED.
Yeah, okay. To follow on to Drew's question there about firewalls, I mean, but so I could think of security devices too, and I could conceivably use NSO to model a security policy change that I need to push to a Palo box.
Absolutely. So it is designed for that, right? So that's kind of one of the areas it really shines, is where you have complicated changes that interrelate a lot, and that can happen with ACLs, for example, where you have like, you know, the order is important, and then you have more than one thing that ends up getting packed into the same one, and you need to manage that, and you need to be able to add and remove things. That's one of the areas it can really do quite well with, without you having to write a whole bunch of super custom code to make it work correctly.
The other question I feel like I should have asked at the start of the show instead of listed the end, but what context are we using NSO in? Because I had TLF kind of in the service provider telco space, but could I use it in the data center? Could I use it on an enterprise WAN, or where does it belong?
I mean, from a technical perspective, NSO could work for any of those use cases. I don't think it's technically constrained from any of that.
So for our enterprise folks that are out there, there's always a question about licensing, and Do you happen to know how NSO is licensed, James? Like, is it like per device or transaction limits or any ideas?
I'm definitely the wrong person to ask. Okay. I can tell you that much.
You don't have your CCIE license, huh?
Okay. I don't even want to hazard much statement on that. So.
Fair enough. We'll skip that one. Then let's talk more about Cisco's support of NSO. How is Cisco TAC when you've had to call them relating to NSO, or have you run into that challenge?
I have interacted with TAC in the past, and like the two main things that I've found, you know, interactions that I've had are dealing with either behavior of the product where maybe the customer feels it should behave in a different way, either because there is an actual bug or there's a perceived bug, or maybe a feature that they'd like to have. So that's TAC is a way that you kind of would be submitting that stuff. And then there's a NED enhancement. So that's a fairly structured process saying, okay, the NED doesn't do this. And then here's what happens when I try to commit that type of configuration. And here's the config I need to do. And they'll handle that basically.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's possible for a NED, again, that network element driver, is that what
that's
this
right.
for?
Yep.
So it's possible that the NED doesn't do everything. It almost sounds like a Terraform provider where, you know, there's some, you know, there could be a limitation just depending on what was or was not put into the NED.
The way it works is basically, it's not, I don't think it's quite like a Terraform provider, but maybe similar, is it's really what commands are supported by the current NED. And there is basically, it's a version, it's almost like a mini product of its own. It has a version, it has like releases. And the way it typically works is, okay, there's version, let's say 1.1.1 right now. And then I'm saying, well, I really need it to have this one feature. So I say, here's what the commands look like. And then they'll say, okay, version 1.2.0 is going to have that. And that's, and then you're going to update that, right? And then everyone will now have access to that command that you requested. Because that's, they don't like branch, spider branch it off too much. Unless like maybe for, I don't even know for sure. Like that's not something that's preferred, obviously, for basic software development.
You mentioned that NSO can be complicated to get up and running. So how's the documentation?
Documentation's, I would say, for the most part, very good. There's a really comprehensive developer guide and administration guide, user guide, LSA. If you don't read it, you won't learn it. So it's one of those things like it's a read the manual situation. I used to do NSO training, you know, and I can't tell you how many questions I've received that were basically like, I don't actually know the answer to this question, but let me go to the developer guide, look up that section, and here's how you do that. You know, yeah. And I found just the documentation has been very useful. Some of the Python API guide I found to be okay. It's good when you're doing like more basic stuff as you start to get into more advanced usage of the API. I found myself like reading the source code instead of the API guide, right? So that would be maybe the area for improvement that I'd see.
Then tell us your best NSO use cases. When you've deployed it and things have gone really well and you were happy, what were those scenarios?
The scenarios that's really going to shine are where you have complicated configurations and you are not dealing with like super, super high frequency changes. If you're trying to make I did a mobile private network before, and the configuration that would have to go onto the packet gateway was complicated. It would have to have a lot of complicated configuration for each device. And then there's a pathway for the data out of there that would also have configuration. And that had to be managed with all the other customers on there. And that was a situation where, you know, it was difficult with NSO and it would be, I think, even more difficult without it. So it's a, that declarative management and configuration is very, very useful when you have to, and also when you need to be able to make changes to a service after it's been deployed, right? If you're just creating a service, it's not that hard to just write a, you know, Jinja template or something and then push it out, right? If it's fairly simple. But then if you need to modify that service and it's complicated, it has a lot of lines of config in that service, or a very complicated golden config where you maybe need to update it from time to time, push out new golden configs to all the devices without breaking what they had. That's the area it does quite a good job, and can do it on devices that are, you know, in really high numbers of lines of configuration, 10, 20, 30,000 lines of config, right? And it can actually, it can manage all that stuff really well. And doing that stuff can be, I would say it'd be very tricky to write a Terraform provider to do that, you know, for example.
This brings up a question. Does NSO have kind of a closed loop function where I've designed a service, configured the service, pushed out the service, it took, and then can it also tell me, yes, the service is up and running and meeting expectations and meeting that intent, or do I need to use some other monitoring tool to be like, yeah, the packets are flowing and the performance is right?
NSO really is more heavily a configuration engine than like a operational validation engine. They, you know, the acquisition of Acedian, I think has, and I know has been basically seen as a way to use. So there's Cisco Crosswork, Acedian, NSO basically working together to basically provide that side of the picture. Okay. So that's kind of it does have operational data capabilities. You can read operate, and I've done it myself. Like I've collected operational data off of devices, BGP information, and then like kind of percolated that up into services where you could view, take a look at that service and see what is the BGP information for that service, right? And that it's doable, but it was, I gotta say, it was tricky.
Okay.
and getting the performance to work properly and everything,
So my assumption then, it sounds like I want to pair this with some other tool to actually monitor the performance of that service after it's been pushed out.
I would like to see NSO do it myself, but it definitely seems to be direction is more something like a CDN for that.
Okay.
So you described NSO use cases as I've got complex changes, you know, these sort of things. All right. Well, where does NSO not fit? What would be a bad place to try to shoehorn it in?
Well, say you had to do more than 50 transactions in a second. I would say that'd be an area where you probably would want a different tool, to be honest. You could do it because with multiple NSO instances, but you run into some CPUs are only going to be so fast, and NSO does everything transactionally. So you're going to be limited by how quickly can NSO actually manage those transactions. And even if you have like an LSA scenario where you are having, you know, your worker NSOs and you have your customer facing NSO, with really well tuned, my understanding is around 40 or 50 transactions per second. If you want to go beyond that, then you're going to be in a bit of a challenge. And as soon as you're really, and you know, even less than that, I might say, as soon as you're really getting into relatively higher amounts of transactions, once you're past, like, once you're going more than one a second, you're getting into, you have to be a bit smart about it, right? That's where it's going to be. You can't be making any of the performance mistakes. Otherwise you will be end up going over, or, and you're going to have to make sure you have a powerful machine that can actually do this stuff effectively.
Yeah, I mean, 40 to 50 changes per second, there's not that many networks that are going to require that. And I'm assuming you're describing more of a burst scenario. I mean, there's no network that's going to need at a steady state 40 to 50 changes per second.
Well, I'm just telling you what the limits are.
Right.
Okay. But yeah, that's what I would say as far as that goes. Another area is it has capabilities for something like a workflow, right? It has multi-stage, an ability to do multi-stage services, right? But it is not going to be your drag and drop workflow system, right? So there's like a reason why Cisco decided to introduce the Crosswork workflow manager, for example. So if you want to have this like nice, easy, viewable process that takes place over time, you know, using BPMN, for example, NSO doesn't have that built in. Crosswork, yeah. But that's basically that's adding a workflow onto NSO. That NSO is managing config. Workflow is saying, okay, well, first, before we apply this config, we got to do these checks. We got to, you know, however it has to be distributed. Maybe you, yeah.
Something more typical for an orchestration engine like Itential, they have that sort of a workflow canvas that you can drag and drop work blocks mm-hmm. and chain them together and have testing and so on as the process goes on. That's not NSO. That's right. You're saying
it's not that you can't implement the same workflows, but you're doing it much more I don't want to say precise because, you know, Itential is precise, right? But it's not you're kind of more introducing it into its declarative engine, and it's going to be a little more complicated just in terms of the actual implementation.
More laborious maybe to do it on NSO.
I don't know if it's more laborious or not. It's like, but you're going to have people who know how to do all of this stuff in NSO, right? Okay. And there's sort of a skill set. Upskilling is going to be maybe a greater distance without a workflow engine of some sort.
Are there other areas for improvement in NSO that you see? Because, I mean, one critique that it sounds like it's pretty complicated to get up and running.
Yeah, there's the kind of ramp up for your skills. Now, I'm going to say I do have like some things I would consider to be like, you know, valid criticisms, right? But I sure. don't think that they are like seen in the context of, you know, it's a product and it is... And there's nothing else that really does what it does in terms of all this model-based stuff. And that mm-hmm. also introduces some challenges. So there's, I think the way that, one thing about NSO is it really thinks in terms of what the state of your network is right now, right? So it has CDB, it stores the right now. It doesn't store the past. And it doesn't store really a plan for the future. You can say, for example, you know, you can build up a change as a transaction and then, you know, commit mm-hmm. that change after you've already built it up over some period of time. Yes. But it's not like you can, like, you know, there's this product OpsMill that'll allow you to, it's open source actually, that'll allow you to basically say, here's a change I want to do. And then, you know, let's pull it into, you know, this instance, maybe my pre-prod or something, see how that goes, or my network, you know, clone. And see how that goes, and then go into the next. And NSO is not really it is managing one network and has a picture of that network. Now, it certainly could be paired with something like that, but it's
but the keyword really is versioning. It doesn't.
Yeah, versioning.
NSO doesn't do versioning. You mentioned OpsMill. That's their InfraHub product, there's an open source version of that. That was one of its core things that it did when they announced that earlier in 2024 versioning. And since then, NetBox Labs has announced that NetBox has got versioning, you know, they're bringing mm-hmm. that too. So I mean, that's definitely a need. So that's interesting. Okay. So versioning isn't really a thing I can do in NSO. All right.
Well, I don't want to say it's not a thing you can do in NSO. You can implement versions of services, for example, but you have to do it. Like, you have to have that as a field, as part of your service. What version is this service? Is this my older version or my newer version? To migrate things over. If you just update the package, you know, you've developed your service package, and you just update that to a newer service package, you can start redeploying your services on your network one after another, but it may lose the ability to deploy the old version of that service, right? It doesn't even know. It's already updated it. Yeah.
Yeah. So just because if you've gone from 1.1 to 1.2, 1.1 isn't really a thing anymore?
Well, it would be if you included this as part of the way that your service package works. It could be, right? So you could, in your service package implementation, say that here's the 1.1. If version 1.1, here's what the golden config is. If version 1.2, here's what the golden config is. But that's something you have to do as part of your software development process. And then you have to figure that out with your DevOps process. So it's all stuff that you have to do, right?
Okay. You're tracking that.
You're thinking
that
about it.
You've got a Git repo or something that's doing that for you. That's not, again, not baked into NSO as a platform.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very good at understanding what the current state of your network is, planning out network-wide changes, doing atomic changes, managing resources, that stuff. Great. You know, this idea of basically Git repo for your network. Not exactly.
Okay. Any other valid criticisms or areas of improvement, things you'd maybe like to see come to NSO in the future?
I've run into issues that I thought were, you know, performance issues that I thought were a little bit too easy to run into. Like, for example, there was a leaf ref in Yang. So this is a way that you can refer from one part of the hierarchy to another. So if you're implementing a service, your leaf ref goes from and if you literally buy the book, is you create a leaf ref on the service to the device that you want to manipulate with that service, or the list of devices. Now, if you remove, let's say you had like 10,000 devices that NSO is working on, you remove one of those devices, that means that now it needs to check every one of the leaf refs that's pointing into that device list to make sure that it's not now dangling, right? Before you could actually commit that transaction. So you can run into a performance issue there when you have lots of devices. It's easy to fix, right? You could use a non-strict leaf ref would be the easiest way, but now it's not going to validate that you don't have a dangling device. So there's a number of things that are kind of like that, where you can implement, you can go down a path that seems okay, but then there actually is a problem. And it takes kind of a bit of experience to understand when that stuff's happening. And it's not, and so it's like, again, it's a bit of a seatbelts off thing. You know, it does what you tell it to do, right? Right. You know what I mean? And it's from a perspective of how it does its changes, extremely well controlled. It's so good that way, but it is extremely well controlled. It will do exactly what you tell it to. And that sometimes
the original
might not be intuitive.
Computers.
Right. Yeah. The computers do what you tell them. And I guess to some extent, any system's like that. Right. But so the other challenge can be that it is an in-memory database, which means that if you have a really big CDB, like if you're into 200-300 gigabytes, it can take some time to load that up, parse that, get that into a running system. Or if you have to do what's called a schema upgrade, so you're going between one version of Yang data model to another, that can take some time. They've done a lot of improvements in this area, but it's something that's going to impact things. Like your orchestration system will not be available while it's doing that update, right? And that might be a problem for you. So that's something you have to think about as part of your sort of systems design and engineering with the system, with NSO.
Is there like a free or trial version that I could get my hands on to play with NSO if people are curious about it?
Absolutely. Yeah. So you can just go on and download it off Cisco, and anybody can, for just, you know, lab use, personal use, whatever. Mm-hmm. And and there's all the documentation's available. One thing I really, really like about NSO is that it's not one of these products that's just sort of hidden behind they show you all the architecture and then say, you know, contact us if you're interested in more. And you can read all the manuals, everything. They're online. You can just go read them and see exactly how this thing works and all the nuts and bolts, really.
So for the free or lab version, is it limited in some way, or is it like time limited or device limited or something?
I don't think you can't use it in a production environment, you know, legally. So that's one thing. Like, license wise, it's limited. I don't know whether it has like some sort of thing where it shuts down. I've never used it. Right. I've been on contracts where we've been able to just have a proper. We didn't have to use it, so it might have some sort of hobbling, but I'm not aware.
Are you telling me Cisco's making it easy for me just to go grab this thing and try it in the lab without fighting about it?
Yeah, it's really easy. Yeah, you just download it.
Now, aside from NSO, which is what we focused on in this, do you think of other free or open source tools that are maybe NSO alternatives?
So I've been, thinking about that quite a bit lately. Actually, right now, internally at Ductus, we're working on a white paper to kind of answer that question in quite a bit of depth, really getting into open source and what parts are maybe... how might you accomplish solving the same problems, let's say. So there's nothing that really does what NSO does. Nothing else is like fully modeling every line of config and creating this declarative intent engine. Like, nothing else really does that. But I mean, there's KubeNet has this SDCIO, which is KubeNet's really recent. It was an open source initiative by Nokia. And it is, it can run a Yang schema and allow you to provide API and stuff for that. And then that connects that into a Kubernetes native basically management engine. And then there's, I mentioned OpsMill before, and there's all kinds of features coming out with NetBox, Nautabot. There's lots of things that can do parts of what NSO does. Nothing does all of it.
Yeah, we'll see what CubeNet turns into. There's a lot of interest in that. Wim Hendrickson from Nokia announced that from the stage at AutoCon 1 in Amsterdam earlier this year, May 2024. And of all the things that I posted from AutoCon 1 on LinkedIn, that was the most popular topic. That was the thing that got the most impressions on LinkedIn. So people were really interested in that. It's a lot there because it's using Kubernetes, not for traditional Kubernetes things, just to run containers. It's using it as a way to configure your network as an engine. It's quite an interesting concept. And I know out of the gate, Nokia kicked that off with full support for SR Linux and with the opportunity for, it can work with anything. It could work with anything if people are willing to spend the time and write the appropriate drivers to make it so. So that is an interesting one. Although, as you said, it's not what NSO is, but it's still very interesting.
It may have some of the same parts. Yeah. And I think every problem, and this is like kind of what I do is, looking at the problem, looking at what's going on and finding a solution that's effective based on that, right? So the answer is not always going to be NSO, depending on things like, budget and how complex are the changes you're trying to push. And, there's so many different things sort of feed into answering that question for a particular customer.
Okay. James Henderson, thank you for a very balanced conversation about Cisco Network Services Orchestrator. This has been great. It's awesome just to talk to someone who's been knee deep in this product as you have been for so long and to give us, that balanced viewpoint of what the product's all about, what it can do, what it can't do, and so on. If people want to reach out to you, James, maybe they got more questions about Cisco NSO or just want to have a chat with you, where would you recommend they go?
Probably easiest way, and it is LinkedIn. I'm like a little hesitant because I have my issues with LinkedIn, but I do find it is a good way to just be able to reach out. You can easily ping me there. So feel free to send me a message there. Say hi. Check out the article series that I'm working on. I would absolutely love more feedback on that. I'm also on the NAF Slack. So feel free to reach out to me there, James Henderson.
But please read the manual if you have NSO questions before you reach out to James.
No, I honestly reach out to me if you have an NSO question. I do not have a problem with it. Give me a shout if you need any help with NSO. I have answered a lot of them.
But NAF Slack, that's Network Automation Forum. You can find out more about the Network Automation Forum at networkautomation.forum. Packet Pushers is a media partner for Network Automation Forum. We're going to be at AutoCon 2 in November 2024 in Denver. You can find us there. Drew and I and maybe some more folks from the Packet Pushers team are going to be there. Thank you for listening to today's Heavy Networking episode. I've been Ethan Banks, along with Drew Conray-Murray. You can find us on LinkedIn or the Packet Pushers Community Slack group. You can join that Slack for free at packetpushers.net/community. Again, it's free and it is open to all, even vendors. All we ask is that you leave the marketing and self-promotion at home. If you have questions or comments about this episode, please send them to packetpushers.net/follow-up. If you don't want to reach out to James directly because you're shy and you just want to send it to us via that follow-up page, we'd be happy to relay questions to him on your behalf. For more from our podcast network, search for Packet Pushers in your podcast client and see the vast array of shows hosted by engineers and deeply experienced IT analysts. Our goal is to provide you with solid information that you can use to be better at your job and indispensable to the organizations you bring your expertise to. And with a little luck, we make you smile along the way. Nearly a dozen shows that we're offering these days, as well as our long-running blog, newsletters, and YouTube channel. Discover everything that we are offering you and all of it for free at packetpushers.net. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.